And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July 28th, 209th day of the year. 156 days remain till the year's over with. And I want to do a shout out to Rich Forrest, who's still sitting in the hospital. Got to get up and get around. Sitting there living like a king and getting it. Well, on this day in 1364, troops of the Republic of Pisa and the Republic of Florence clashed in the Battle of Cascina. 1540, Thomas Cromwell is executed at the order of Henry VIII of England on charges of treason. If you don't do as I say, I'm going to cut your head off. Henry marries his fifth wife, Catherine Howard, that same day. 1571, La Laguna Encomienda, known today as Laguna Province in the Philippines, is founded by the Spaniards as one of the oldest provinces in the country. 1635, in the 80 Years' War, the Spanish captured a strategic Dutch fortress of Chincasan. 1656, the Second Northern War, the Battle of Warsaw begins. 1778, Constitution of the Province of Cantabria is ratified at the Assembly Hall in Barcina, La Puente, Riosin in Spain. 1794, French Revolution, Maximilian Robespierre and Louis Antoine de Saint-Just are executed by guillotine in Paris, France. Quite often, those that start the revolution and lead the revolution wind up being victims of the revolution. And with Maximilian Robespierre, it couldn't happen to a finer guy. 1808, Mahmud II becomes Sultan of the Ottoman Empire and Caliph of Islam. 1809, Peninsula War, Battle of Talavera. Sir Arthur Wellesley's British, Portuguese, and Spanish army defeats a French force led by Joseph Bonaparte. 1821, Jose de San Martin declares the independence of Peru from Spain. 1854, USS Constellation, the last all-sail warship built by the U.S. Navy, now a museum ship in Baltimore, is commissioned. 1864, American Civil War, Battle of Ezra Church. Confederate troops make a third unsuccessful attempt to drive Union forces from Atlanta. Personally, as far as I'm concerned, they could have had Atlanta. 1866, at the age of 18, Vinnie Riam becomes the first and youngest female artist to get a commission from the U.S. government for a statue of Abraham Lincoln. 1868, 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution certified, establishing African-American citizenship and guaranteeing due process of law. Unfortunately, due process of law is now laughed at by most courts. 1896, City of Miami, Florida is incorporated. 1914, in the culmination of the July crisis, Austria-Hungary declares war on Serbia, which starts World War I. That was after the assassination of Archduke who was the heir to the throne of the Austrian-Hungary Empire. 1915, the U.S. begins a 19-year occupation of Haiti. 1917, the Silent Parade takes place in New York City in protest against murders, lynching, and other violence directed toward African Americans. For those who are not familiar with the Silent Parade, it was a silent march of about 10,000 African Americans along Fifth Avenue. They started at 57th Street in New York City. The event was organized by the NAACP, church, and community leaders to protest violence directed toward African Americans, such as the recent lynchings in Waco and Memphis. The parade was precipitated by the East St. Louis riots in May and July of 1917, where at least 40 black people were killed by white mobs. That was in part touched off by a labor dispute where blacks were used for strike breaking. The 1932, President Hoover ordered the U.S. Army to forcibly evict the Bonus Army of World War I veterans gathered in Washington, D.C. See, the Bonus Army was a group of 43,000 demonstrators made up of 17,000 U.S. World War I veterans together with their families and affiliated groups. They gathered in Washington to demand early cash redemption of their service bonus certificates. They were promised payments, which of course our government failed to live up to, which is frankly nothing new. 1935, first flight of the Boeing B-17 Flying Fortress. 1938, Hawaii Clipper disappears between Guam and Manila as the first loss of an airliner in the Trans-Pacific China Clipper service. 1939, the Sutton Hoo helmet is discovered. It was an ornately decorated Anglo-Saxon helmet found during a 1939 excavation of the Sutton Hoo ship burial. He was buried about 625 and is widely associated with King Radwald of East Anglia. This elaborate decoration may have given it a secondary function, similar to a crown. It was both a functional piece of armor that would have offered considerable protection if ever used in warfare, and a decorative, prestigious piece of extravagant metalwork. It was called the most iconic object from one of the most spectacular archaeological discoveries ever made. The visage on the helmet contains eyebrows, a nose, and mustache. It creates the image of a man joined by a dragon's head to become a soaring dragon with outstretched wings. It became a symbol of the early Middle Ages and of archaeology in general. It was determined to be the property of Edith Pretty, owner of the land on which they were found. She donated the helmet and other items to the British Museum. The helmet's on permanent display in room 41 of the museum. It's worth seeing if you happen to be in England. 1942, World War II, Soviet leader Stalin issues Order 227. In response to alarming German advances, all those who retreat or otherwise leave their positions without orders to do so are to be tried in a military court with punishment ranging from duty to Strafbat battalion. Imprisonment in a gulag, or even execution. 1943, World War II, Operation Gomorrah. Royal Air Force bombs Hamburg, Germany, causes a firestorm that kills 42,000 German civilians. Not a lot of German soldiers went down in that fire. 1945, U.S. Army B-25 bomber crashed into the 79th floor of the Empire State Building. Killed 14 and injured 26. 1957, heavy rain and a mudslide in Ishihaya, western Kyushu, Japan, kills 992 folks. 1960, the Germans' Volkswagen Act came into force. It's a set of German laws enacted in 1960 regulating the privatization of the Volkswagen Volkswagen Werk GmbH into the Volkswagen Group. In order to maintain government control in this privately owned company, it stipulated that the votes in major shareholder meeting resolutions required 4/5, or 80%, to be in agreement. Now, this part of the law was deemed to violate the free movement of capital principle of European Union corporate law. After a series of challenges from 2007 to 2013, the German Parliament finally amended that part in 2013 to the European Union Court of Justice satisfactions, if you want to call it a court of justice. In 1965, Vietnam War. President Lyndon I'm in charge Johnson announces his order to increase the number of U.S. troops in South Vietnam from 75,000 to 125,000. 1973, the summer jam at Watkins Glen. Nearly 600,000 people attend the rock festival at the Watkins Glen International Raceway. 1974, Spetsgruppe A, Russia's elite special forces, was formed. 1976, the Tung Shan earthquake, measuring between 7.8 and 8.2, flattens Tung Shan in the People's Republic of China. Kills 242,769 and injures 164,851 people. 1984, Olympic Games. Games of the 23rd Olympiad. 1984, opened in Los Angeles on this date in 84. 1996, the remains of a prehistoric man are discovered near Kennewick in Washington. These remains became known as the Kennewick Man. 2001, Australian Ian Thorpe becomes the first swimmer to win 6 gold medals at a single world championship meeting. 2002, 9 coal miners trapped in the flooded Quakequeak mine in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, rescued after 77 hours underground. 2002, Pulkovo Aviation Enterprises Flight 9560 crashes after takeoff from the Sheremetyevo International Airport in Moscow. 14 of the 16 people on board are killed. 2005, the Provisional Irish Republican Army calls an end to its 30-year-long armed campaign against British rule in Northern Ireland. 2010, Air Blue Flight 202 crashes into the Margela Hills north of Islamabad in Pakistan. Kills 152 people on board. Deadliest aviation accident in Pakistan history and the first involving an Airbus A321. 2011, while flying from Seoul, South Korea to Shanghai, Asiana Airlines Flight 991 developed an in-flight fire in the cargo hold. The Boeing 747-400F freighter attempted to divert to Jeju International Airport but crashed into the sea southwest of Jeju Island. Both crew members were killed. 2017, Prime Minister of Pakistan Nawaz Sharif is disqualified. As I was saying, Prime Minister, in 2017, Prime Minister of Pakistan Nawaz Sharif is disqualified from office for life by the Supreme Court of Pakistan. They found him guilty of corruption charges. In 2018, Australian Wendy Tuck becomes the first woman skipper to win the Clipper Around the World Yacht Race. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Alfonso Mutatupatathu in the Syro-Malabar Catholic Church, Botvid, Johann Sebastian Bach, George Frederick Handel, and Henry Purcell in the Episcopal Church commemoration. Johann Sebastian Bach, Heinrich Schultz, George Frederick Handel, and the Lutheran commemoration. Nazarus and Celsius, Pedro Poveda, Castro Verde, Pope Innocent I, Pope Victor I, Samson of Dahl. The commemoration of the Great Upheaval in Canada. Earliest day on which emancipation can fall. August 3rd is the latest, celebrated on Thursday before the first Monday in August in Bermuda. Fiestas Patrias celebrates independence of Peru from Spain by General José de San Martín in 1821. Liberation Day in San Marino. Awatsoka Eve in the Faroe Islands and World Hepatitis Day. Alrighty. Let's see what else. Alrighty. In 388, the Battle of Aquila, Emperor Theodosius beats Emperor Magnus Maximus. 754, Pope Stephen II makes Pippin de Corte the King of France. Yes, he spoke for God. 1148, Second Crusade. Crusaders abandon their siege of Damascus. 1330, Battle of Belbuz. Serbian forces defeat the Bulgarian army. 1434, Navigator Gil Enes leaves Cape Bahador for Lisbon. 1579, Cardinal Granville returns to Madrid. 1586, Sir Thomas Harriot introduces potatoes to Europe on his return to England. Yes, that's almost as exciting as the introduction of tobacco. In 1609, Admiral George Summers settles in Bermuda. 1635, Spanish Marshal Piccolomini conquers Sincansans. 1696, De Croisy succeeds La Plectia as French Minister of Finance. 1708, Monarch Angakurat II of Mataram gives himself up to VOC. 1717, Prussian King Frederick Wilhelm I gives compulsory education to those between the ages of 5 and 12. 1741, Captain Vitus Bering discovers Mount St. Elias in Alaska. 1742, Maria Theresa of Austria and Frederick the Great of Prussia sign a peace treaty in Berlin. 1790, Henry James Pye appointed as British Poet Laureate by King George III. That was an important thing since he couldn't do anything else, right? 1794, well, I talked about Maximilian Robespierre and 22 other leaders of the Terror were guillotined to thunderous applause in Paris. 1808, Mahmud II succeeds Mustafa IV as Sultan of Turkey. 1849, Memnon is the first clipper to reach San Francisco. It's 120 days out of New York. 1851, total solar eclipse was captured on a daguerreotype photograph. 1858, first use of fingerprints as a means of identification is made by Sir William James Herschel of the Indian Civil Service. 1858, French photographer and balloonist Nadar takes the first airborne photo in a balloon of a French village of Petit-Bicêtre. He was 80 meters in the air. 1862, Confederate forces are defeated at Moore's Hill in Missouri. 1864, second day of battle at Deep Bottom Run in Virginia. 1866, the metric system becomes a legal measurement system in the U.S. 1883, shocks triggered by a volcanic Ipomeo destroy 1,200 houses at Casamicolia. Kills 2,000 people. 1893, a petition organized by Kate Shepherd, which demanded women's suffrage, is delivered to New Zealand's parliament. Over 25,000 women signed it. That was a fifth of the adult European female population. 1898. Okay, it's interesting. Everybody and their dog is trying to sell Medicare and Medicaid, when only the federal government can give that. 1898, Spanish troops in Ponce, Puerto Rico surrender. 1900, hamburger created by Louis Lansing in Connecticut. 1904, Rafael Reyes becomes dictator of Colombia after losing Panama. Interesting thing about that, Panama was controlled by Colombia, and when we got ready to put in the canal, we landed Marines on the isthmus, and Colombia did not want to fight with the U.S. Marines. 1904, Interior Minister of Russia, Vyacheslav Plevy, is assassinated. As leader of the most reactionary elements of government, he was hated for his repressive policies. 1914, the First Lord of Admiralty, Winston Churchill, orders the British Grand Fleet to go to Scapa Flow. 1914, Austria-Hungary had been offered the opportunity for mediation over the assassination of the Archduke, but they decided not to indulge in mediation, declared war on Serbia. 1915, because of virtual anarchy, U.S. Marines go ashore in Haiti on orders of President Woodrow Wilson. And this led to an occupation that lasted until 1934. 1926, U.S. and Panamanian Pact about safeguard of the Panama Canal took place. 1928, the 9th Summer Olympic Games opened in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. 1931, mob hitman Mad Dog Call allegedly participates in a kidnapping attempt that results in the shooting death of a child And that got him the nickname Mad Dog. "White Zombie," the first feature-length zombie film directed by Victor Halperin and starring Bela Lugosi, is released in the U.S. 1938, the 34,000-ton Cunard White Star liner Mauritania is launched at Birkenhead. 1940, Radio Orange begins broadcasting from London. 1942, Zionist partisan ZOB forms in Poland. 1943, Italian fascist dictator Benito Mussolini resigned. Also in 43, President FDR announced the end of coffee rationing in the U.S. And in 1944, Adolf Hitler routed four divisions of South France to Normandy. And in 1945, physicist Reimer Schreiber and Lieutenant Colonel Pierre B. Silver arrive on the Pacific Island of Tinian with the plutonium core used to assemble the Fat Man bomb used in the bombing of Nagasaki on August 9th. And in 1945, elevator girl Betty Lou Oliver survives falling 75 stories after fog causes a U.S. bomber plane to crash into the Empire State Building. Broke the cable supporting the elevator she was operating. And this remains a world record for the longest survived elevator fall. Well, if the elevator falls right before you hit, jump up. Well, on that note, we're going to end our history session. We've been talking about military encounters with extraterrestrials and UFOs. We're going to talk more about that. In early 1973, a Royal Norwegian Navy Special Forces deep-sea diver was helicoptered on an explanation for his advanced training at Bergen to Sognefjord, where he and another diver found themselves on a warship. There, they were suited up with oxygen helium equipment for a deep descent. Presented with state-of-the-art underwater military cameras, the two men were ordered to observe, report, and debrief, and memorize every detail of what they found. Now, what had happened? There was a UFO in the fjord that vanished. It was the one that they were trying to keep blockaded into Sognefjord. Now, this prolonged engagement had been far from secret, been followed around the globe in the world press, including the New York Times. Now, the Times, of course, very clearly avoided any references to extraterrestrials, but it was a loss to explain just what the Norwegian naval authorities had been chasing. A few months later, they found something on the bottom of the fjord that was, and still is to this day, classified as top secret. Now, the two divers were not told what they were supposed to find or given any further knowledge about what was going on. Well, the moment both divers simultaneously set foot on the midnight dark bottom of the fjord at about 300 feet beneath the surface, their lights revealed a pair of deeply grooved tracks, obviously made by a belted vehicle of some kind, like a tank or a bulldozer, and he progressed in a straight path through the ooze. Each track was 30 to 50 feet wide and separated by a perimeter 30 to 50 foot wide gap. Now, what the marks in the fjord bed suggested anything had been drug or towed, but the vehicle that left those tracks had been estimated as 110 to 150 feet across. Something completely foreign to our technological capacity, according to one of the divers. Both now and then, and it looked like the object had been lifted off the sea floor. Both men swam over the unvarying tracks, which suddenly terminated after nearly 2 miles. They found no further trace of it further east of the fjord's entrance. Now, the Navy superiors provided the divers no clarification about this mission, and on photographs taken of that deep water track were and still are classified. They've been doubtlessly left behind by the 500-foot-long vehicle that then successfully hunted for a few months but in that same direction. Now, these subsurface tracks were not publicly disclosed till the next century by one of the divers. International attention shifted from the lengthy pursuit of what was, by all accounts, a USO, unidentified submerged object, to headline-grabbing news about the increasingly costly conflict in Vietnam. And even there, Americans are simultaneously fighting two enemies. The VC... My number seems to be written on every bathroom wall in the country. Everybody wants to sell me something, usually to do with insurance of some sort. Now, as I said, in Vietnam at this point in time, Americans are simultaneously fighting two enemies, the VC and the ETs. One of those Americans was Peter Mazzola, a Ford observer from an army platoon pinned down in tall elephant grass by enemy fire. His men lay low, hoping to find a way out of their encirclement when several glowing spears slowly and silently arose over the paddy fields and palm trees not far away. Assuming it was some kind of Viet Cong reconnaissance craft, Mazzola radioed in their coordinates to the U.S. Navy cruisers that were sitting offshore. In no time at all, shells hurled in from the warships in the south toward those objects, and when the objects began to receive artillery rounds from the other direction, from the north, the north Vietnamese position, the shells never made the target. They all exploded short. Apparently, these things had some kind of force field around them. And even though the gunfire, both the Viet Cong and the U.S. Navy, was right on target, neither side touched the objects. According to the forward observers, we could see the black smoke puffs in the air. The spears continued to hover silently and gracefully, but in less than 5 minutes, they shot straight up in the air and vanished. Taking advantage of the confusion caused by these high strangeness, Mazzola and his comrades made good their escape. After the war, he became a New York City police detective, later founded Staten Island Scientific Bureau of Investigation for the serious study of UFO phenomena. Now, human soldiers continued to battle each other while confronting alien enemies until the fall of Saigon on April 30th, 1975. The most notable extraterrestrial confrontation of that period occurred the previous June of 74 when Japan Air Defense Air Self-Defense Force commanders ordered a pair of F-4EJ Phantom Jet fighters flown by Lieutenant Colonel Toshio Nakamura and Major Shiro Kubota to intercept a presumed Soviet bomber near Hokkaido, the country's most northerly territory. Once those planes were airborne, they were informed the intruder was actually a bright-colored UFO, first observed by ground spotters and then tracked by radar operators. Vectors at their target at 30,000 feet, both pilots made visual contact with the red disc at Major Kubota, described as made and flown by intelligent beings. As Kubota and Nakamura came within firing range of the object, it began executing a series of evasive maneuvers. In fact, it involved the Phantoms in a dogfight. After several minutes, during which neither pilot was able to score any hits on the disc, it collided first with one and then with the other aircraft. Both pilots successfully ejected, but Nakamura's parachute was set afire and he fell to his death as the UFO sped away. These confrontations taking place in Asia, the Russians were waging their own war of the worlds. Although the heavy hand of Soviet censorship erased many details, enough information concerning the premier military engagement of its kind survived the USSR's collapse for post-communist researchers to reconstruct. They learned from fragments of original documents in Stavka, the Red Army's high command, that history's largest air battle between earthbound aviators and alien UFO knots occurred during... And this battle occurred during the early summer of 1967. According to the story, it took place on the Soviet Union's border region with Iran and Afghanistan. And although the total number of combatants is unknown, six modern Soviet aircraft were destroyed and 12 pilots died. Facts regarding their identities or the types of warplanes they flew are still missing. More certain, though, was Stavka's subsequent demand that absolutely forbade any contact with UFOs. Furthermore, military aviators were ordered not to approach the objects at less than 6 miles distance. Now, such deadly confrontations weren't limited to the USSR or Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War era. In the early evening of September 8, 1970, radar operators at Lincolnshire's Royal Air Force Station, Benbrook, near the east coast of England, detected several unauthorized aircraft over Grimsby, a seaport in northeast Lincolnshire. That same moment, sightings of flying transparent spheres according to local newspaper coverage, were reported at the village of Flamborough, about 50 miles away on the North Sea. After the anonymous intruders ignored repeated radio calls for their identification, RAF base commanders assumed they were Russian and ordered a quick reaction alert fighter to intercept them. At 10.06 p.m., 28-year-old U.S. Air Force Captain William Schaffner took off from Benbrook in Foxtrot 94, a British-built electric lightning outfitted with a pair of 30-millimeter Aden cannons and a quick quiver of air-to-air missiles. Ground radar controllers vectored him to their mysterious scope contacts over the North Sea. Shortly, he made visual contact with something resembling a flying cone. While closing on it, he radioed that his avionics were going haywire and is being outmaneuvered by one of Flamborough's transparent spears, despite the lightning's 1,300 miles per hour top speed and 20,000 foot per minute rate of climb. About 10:30 p.m., all communications at Foxtrot 94 failed as 10 crew members on board a passing Averill Shackleton, a large maritime patrol aircraft, witnessed the jet lose control and fall into the sea about 5 miles offshore. Its wreckage was discovered October 7th by Royal Navy divers operating from a minesweeper, the HMS Cadleston. They were surprised to find the aircraft in relatively good condition, sitting with the proper side up on the ocean floor. Greater surprise came early the following December when Foxtrot 94 was brought to the surface by Royal Navy salvage workers. They found the plane's canopy still locked into position over the cockpit, but it was empty. According to the Grimsby Evening Telegraph, Captain Schaffner was declared dead, but his body was never found. So the question was, had he been atomized by an inconceivably powerful weapon or teleported out of his electric lightning into the cone-shaped vehicle he'd been pursuing? Now, stateside, U.S. military forces were no less under attack, although they were in grave danger of losing far more than a dozen men. Less than 6 months before the Soviet air battle near the Afghanistan-Iranian border, front page story in the Minot Daily News for December 6, 1966, told of numerous eyewitnesses, including police and local government officials, who saw luminous, disc-shaped craft flying in the vicinity of Mohall, North Dakota. That's near the Minot Air Force Base, America's most important military installation. Headquarters for a wing of B-52s loaded with atomic warheads and intercontinental ballistic missiles. Captain David Schindel was the Minuteman ICBM launch commander there the next night when a single UFO appeared over the facility. That extraterrestrial intruder destroyed no less than 10 nuclear-tipped missiles in Captain Schindel's charge. Fortunately, he disabled them in time to prevent a series of atomic explosions that would otherwise decimated the Peace Garden State. He abided by Air Force suppression of all public knowledge regarding North Dakota's brush with a catastrophe for more than 50 years. Until the 2017 release of his book, appropriately entitled, It Never Happened. Just 8 months after Minot's missiles were taken down, the base was under siege again. On the night of July 26, 1967, Minot's executive officer got a red alert notice from radar operators at the North American Aerospace Defense Command, located at Peterson Air Force Base near Colorado Springs in Colorado. He was informed of an unidentified contact ascending over one of the missile silos under his control. Immediately scrambled two specimens of the Convair F-106 Delta Dart, then regarded as the ultimate interceptor. As the fighters were getting airborne, heavily armed members of a security team dispatched to the silo in question were astounded to see a metal disc about 50 feet across, its rim encircled by a garland of bright lights, moving slowly about 100 feet above the facility. Then the apparition stopped suddenly in midair. ascended vertically 400 feet to hover briefly before vanishing away at the sound of the approaching jets. The next night, what appeared to be the same disk was observed drifting over each ICBM emplacement. Within an hour, according to UFO historian Mac Maloney, all the launch facilities reported that the UFO had been over their location until, like a bee singing like a special flower, it seemed to select a particular silo, pausing there for about 40 feet in the air. Moments later, the missile's emergency indicators began to repeatedly flash in big, bright red lights, launch in progress, accompanied by the wail of doomsday sirens blaring across the base. Horrified control room directors and personnel fell over themselves trying to deactivate the nuclear-tipped missile before it shot off on its irreversible course toward Moscow. With only moments to spare, they succeeded in canceling the launch sequence, and the awful emergency indicators went dark. As the chorus of sirens echoed away, the illuminated disk escaped unnoticed in the confusion. But it was apparent to all concerned the UFO had probed the missile's control and switched them on. At any of the inhibit commands failed, the missile would have launched. So in other words, aliens were attempting to precipitate a nuclear war. And even that near miss was maybe less compelling than a discovery made by Sergeant Carl Wolf when he and his fellow electronic experts were compiling surveillance data for an escalating Vietnam War. He was a color laboratory photographic technician trained in electronic photograph repair at Colorado's Lowry Air Force Base. During July of 1965, he was issued a top-secret crypto security clearance to the Tactical Air Command at Langley in Virginia in the 44th Reconnaissance Technical Group, then involved in photographic reconnaissance by satellite photography. Some computerized contact printing instrument that was not functioning properly, and Wolf was called in to fix it. When admitted to the equipment room, he found another airman, second-class technician at work on the printer, which was about the size of a small apartment refrigerator. Wolf said he showed me the equipment when the digital information came in, or it was converted to photographic images. They were doing 35mm strips of film at the time, which were then assembled into an 18.5 by 11 inch mosaic. Those strips were from successive passes around the moon, and they would take and build up a photograph by scanning one section of the moon, then another, that they would get a large image. So this mosaic then would be put into the contact printer, and that was a print. Because the dark room in which the printer had been installed was unsuitable for repair work, Sergeant Wolf telephoned guards for moving the equipment to a larger, better lit area. While waiting for them to arrive, Wolf and his colleague walked over to the other side of the lab. He said, "By the way, we discovered a base on the back side of the moon." And he pulled out one of the mosaics that showed this base, which had geometric shapes that were towers, spherical buildings. They were tall, thin towers, but they were massive. Some of the structures are half a mile in size, and they're all different structures and different size photographs. They were angular shots with shadows. Wolf said he tried to relate them in his own mind to structures here on Earth, and they don't compare to anything you see here in scale and structure. Not metallic, they were more like stone structures, but fabricated stone. And some of the buildings seemed to have very reflective surfaces. A couple of the structures he saw reminded him of cooling towers at power plants. They had that sort of shape. Some others were very straight and tall, with a flat top. Some were round. Some of them looked like Quonset huts, like a greenhouse. He said in the photograph he saw, they were fairly clustered together over a large landscape. One building had a dish-like shape to it. It was very large. It looked like a radar dish, but it was a building. All this was 4 years before Neil Armstrong was the first man to walk on the moon. But the extraterrestrial was operating more than lunar installations, according to Clifford Stone, a former U.S. Army Sergeant First Class attached to the 96th Civil Affairs Group, 6th Civil Affairs Company. NBC Nuclear Biological Chemical Communications with a nuclear security clearance stationed at Fort Lee, Virginia. In the winter of 1969, Stone, who I met in Roswell, was a non-commissioned officer in charge of measuring surface readings of a crashed off-world vehicle outside Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania, with his Geiger counter. Examining the wedge-shaped craft, he saw the corpses of several occupants. Over the next 10 years, he was engaged in another 11 related investigations for the Army, where he learned shocking news about the aliens. He said, we, meaning the U.S. military, was involved in a major engagement in 1970 in one of their bases at a place called Dubadim in Tien Province in the Mekong Delta region of South Vietnam. That's about 7 miles from the Cambodian border. Now, a similar confrontation was described by Phil Snyder, a certified geologist, structural engineer, and explosive expert. Took place at a subterranean federal government installation he helped construct in 1969 on the Jicarilla Apache Indian Reservation under Archuleta Mesa on the Colorado-New Mexico border, northwest of Dulce, a small New Mexico town. I've done a video that I'll be releasing shortly called Secrets of Dulce. Snyder claimed during his June 5, 1995, prepared his expo lecture at California's Orange County Convention Center. He was one of only three survivors from a vicious firefight that occurred in late August of 1979 with tall extraterrestrials at this underground facility. Although he didn't specify how many aliens died, he said 66 U.S. Air Force and NATO Delta Force personnel were killed. Publicly describing the incident, he claimed to have been repeatedly threatened by unknown persons who made him fear for his personal safety. He was eventually murdered. Although many listeners found his unsubstantiated account difficult to accept, they were shocked to learn that just 7 months later, his dead body was found in his Wilsonville, Oregon apartment. Rubber catheter hose had been wrapped 3 times around his neck and half knotted in front. He was a victim of an execution-style murder, but he'd also been tortured. Marie, his grieving widow, told newspaper reporters that Phil had no known enemies and wasn't in a serious debt to anybody. She emphatically denied police accusations her husband committed suicide. Given the mutilated condition of the corpse, that was a physical impossibility anyway. Well, on this note, because it's becoming more difficult for me to talk, we're going to wrap this show up. I'll be back tomorrow. And once again, you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show talking about more military encounters with extraterrestrials. Till then, this is... I bid you a good evening.